everybody. It's Lon Seidman. It's Monday again, and that means it's time for your weekly wrap-up. And I want to begin first, as we always do, by thanking our newest Patreon supporters. We have Bruce Obenauer and Robert Santillan, who is also known as Your Geeky Tipster on YouTube, another fellow YouTube creator. You can find his channel over at lon.tv/tipster if you want to check out what he's all about. And now we're going to move on to our non-ad ad this week. Every week I put in an ad position in the hopes that we might be able to sell some advertising on the wrap-up here. And I've got a good one for you this week. So you all know I'm a big fan of Plex. And of course, we have our ongoing affiliate relationship with Plex. So you can go to lon.tv/Plex. And if you sign up for a free account, we get a commission on that. There's also a way to gift one of their Plex Pass subscriptions to a friend. And this week, there is a way that you can get a Plex Pass subscription for 6 months for free. And that is by buying my favorite media player, which is the NVIDIA Shield TV. So if you buy one, you get 6 months of Plex Pass usage. And with that, you can then get a deal on the HD Home Run. So they're extending an offer to Plex Pass subscribers until July 17th to get 30% off one of the HD Home Run network tuners. So you can have one good deal that kind of goes into the next one. And we can get a small commission based on that from the affiliate sales, both of the NVIDIA Shield, as well as your signing up for a Plex account. So if you are interested in that, definitely check it out with the links that you just saw. So I had a pretty productive week this week insofar as uploads are concerned. So we had 6 videos go up to the Extras channel since the last wrap-up went up on the channel here. So you can see a bunch of unboxings and some supplementary content as well. I have about 3,000 subscribers now on the Extras channel. So if you haven't subscribed, please do. I'm trying to build that one up a little bit because I can upload with more volume over there than here, just because I like to have all these videos here be polished and produced. The Extras channel is unboxings and a lot of more casual content, but a lot of it feeds into what I do here, and I'm getting a lot of good feedback from the Extras channel that I bring over to here when I do my main review. So if you are eager to see what I'm working on, you can check it out there. I do all sorts of different things over on the Extras channel. On the main channel, we looked at a whole bunch of stuff this week. We had a 27-inch ultra-thin monitor from Dell, $800 monitor. It does support USB Type-C, so you can plug in a single cable and charge your laptop and then get the video over to the display, and they have some USB ports on the display as well. The one problem with it is that it only supports 45 watts of charging, so big laptops won't work very well. Little ones do, but you can see the full review to see what that one's all about. It's a 1440p display. We also had our monthly sponsored video from Plex where I showed you how the new DVR live TV feature works. And if you are looking to watch live TV on your iPad or iPhone in the house, this is a very good solution because it works on those devices as part of your Plex Pass subscription. And on the iPad, you can even do the picture-in-picture thing. It's coming to Android devices shortly, but it does work now with the NVIDIA Shield TV. So you can see how all of it works here. So you can now record live TV and watch live TV with Plex along with a compatible network tuner. We also took a look at the Xiaomi Mi Pad 3. It's an iPad mini alternative tablet. Nice little device running Android. It doesn't have a fingerprint sensor and a few other things I would have liked, but overall, not a bad little deal here. So you can check out that one and see what it's all about. And we checked out the Hyperkin Retron HD. It's a $39 NES clone that will run your old games on cartridges. It's not perfect, but it's cheap and it works, and it might be worth taking a look at. So you can see my full review linked down below in the master playlist. We also did a follow-up that has some errata attached to it on the Lenovo Yoga 72015 because we looked at how the Thunderbolt port worked on the 13-inch with the eGPU, and a lot of people wanted to see if the 15 would have the same performance. And I thought going into this that the 13 had 4 lanes of PCI Express going over its Thunderbolt port, and I had heard that this one only had 2. What I found since I uploaded this video is that both the 13 and the 15 have only 2 lanes of PCI Express traffic. I actually posted up a little article that I wrote that you can find at the link down there, so you can read more about exactly what's going on with these devices. The good news is that it doesn't really impact performance of the eGPU I was testing, namely a GTX 1070. So I think within reason, if you've got like a mid-level GPU in your eGPU box, you're not going to see any real difference in performance. You're going to be maxing out that card just with 2 lanes of traffic, at least if you have an external display attached. One thing I do want to test, which I'll probably do in the next week or two, is my MacBook Pro, which does have 4 lanes of traffic going to its Thunderbolt port. I want to see if maybe we get better performance when we're running on its internal display with the external GPU. That did result in a performance hit on the Lenovo's, and I didn't yet test that on the Mac to see if we'd have the same issue there. So I got some more things to test out with this, but I definitely wanted to clear the air on that. It is only 2 lanes, but again, doesn't seem to have an impact on a mid-range GPU if you're planning to do an eGPU on that device. And I appeared on another YouTube channel, the YouTube Creators Hub, which is a podcast, but it's also part of a YouTube channel run by Dusty Porter, who's a fellow creator, does a lot of tech on the platform. We talked about what it was like going full-time and some of the things that I think about now running this as a full-time business and occupation. So it's a really fun interview, actually, and you can check it out at the link down below. And I've also put it on my audio podcast feed as well. And now it's time for a couple of things that are on my mind. We are now in week 13 of me doing this full time, and it was a very productive week, as you can see from all the content that I pushed out. I had a bunch of consulting work that I was doing the prior week, which kind of slowed me down last week, so I felt like I really got caught up this week, which really helped. So I am bringing on somebody to help with some of the other tasks around the channel here to help me be more productive. The problem is finding the right person, and I'm really taking some time here to try to figure out whether I need to bring in somebody into this place every day, which is becoming a little bit more challenging to find that right person, or maybe outsource different parts of it. One of the things that I discovered is that I might be able to package up some of my videos for editing into a way that I could actually transmit to somebody with Final Cut Pro. So I'm considering maybe having some of that done remotely. And if you're interested in perhaps editing some of my videos, I'm interested in talking to you. I don't have a lot of money to spend on this project, but the editing doesn't take all that long either. So if you have Final Cut Pro and a pretty fast internet connection and you have a few hours here or there to spare, it might be something we should talk about. So definitely leave me a comment down below, or actually better yet, email me at lon@lon.tv, because I might be able to have a few people that I go to with this kind of thing. I'm thinking in particular videos like the wrap up here, where I shoot this usually in the morning. I shot it later in the afternoon today because I was watching the Apple event, but it'd be nice to be able to farm this out to somebody and have them edit it and shoot the footage back to me. One of the cool things that Final Cut Pro does is it can actually take my large video that I'm shooting raw here, compress it down into something really small that somebody can work on, and they can actually just shoot me back the project file itself, which I can then reintegrate and put in with my big files here and upload. So it actually would be a pretty quick process, at least on the return trip. The outgoing trip is about 3 or 4 gigs of data, but not all that bad. So if you're interested, definitely let me know down below. I think I want to get this editing thing done first and then look at some of the in-house stuff that I might be able to get from somebody locally here. So Final Cut Pro only, but let me know if you are interested and let me know what your rates are, and I'll see if I can make it work with the budget that I have here. And as I mentioned, I was watching the Apple keynote earlier today, and one of the big announcements they made was about iMessage and a pretty big change to it, actually, that not a lot of people are talking about because there's a lot of shiny new objects that they are releasing, which I'll get to in a second. Now, iMessage, if you're not familiar, is a messaging technology that works across all of Apple's devices, Macs, iPads, iPhones, iPod Touches, and I can send a message to, for example, my wife, who also has an iPhone, and rather than going through my cell phone provider's texting system, the SMS system, it goes through Apple, and an encrypted message is sent from my phone to hers, and the private keys for that encryption reside on each of our phones, and if our phones are locked, nobody can get at that private key to decrypt the communication, not even Apple. It's been one of the selling points of the iMessage system. Additionally, Apple has not been storing those messages in the cloud. So for example, if I have an iPhone with 3 years worth of messaging data stored locally on this device, if I buy a new iPad, those messages are not synced up unless I'm restoring from an iCloud backup. In other words, Apple is not, within its iMessage infrastructure, not storing the individual communications between users unless they elect to put it into an iCloud backup. But again, the messaging system has been totally separate. Now today, they announced that they're going to be doing synchronization of messaging. Now, it does solve a problem that this non-syncing created, which was that all of your archives are stored locally on your phone. And I've got gigabytes now of messaging archives on my phone that I don't want to erase. Things like my little log to my family about the birth of our two daughters, all that cool stuff is all sitting inside of this phone with pictures and everything else that I don't want to lose, but I also don't want to necessarily store on my device all the time. So there is some convenience being added here, but I'm wondering what this is going to do for user privacy, specifically around how the government or any government might be able to get access to my messages now stored on Apple's server. So if the synchronization becomes a default feature, now all of this messaging data and the archives of it will be stored forever on Apple's servers and presumably accessible to law enforcement, because before all the private keys were tied to the phones and the communication going between them. Now there's got to be some other private key stored somewhere else, I'm assuming. We'll have to read into this a little bit later. That will probably be accessible to government. Maybe this was a concession that Apple Apple made to authorities here, because there's been a big dust up between the FBI and Apple over gaining access to sometimes impenetrable iPhones that they're trying to get information from. So I'm really eager to see how the security plays out with this, because Apple was really touting this fact that they didn't store messages as a real privacy boost here for their users, and now they are. This is a big change. I'm really eager to see exactly how they're going to secure user data from governments moving forward. And Apple did announce a bunch of updates to their Mac line, including a new iMac Pro that'll be out in December. It's going to start at $5,000. It's coming out in December because it needs to be out before the end of the year so everybody can take their tax write-off on these things. So they're definitely going to be sending out the little reminder email in December when it comes out to say, hey, you know, you can take $25,000 off your taxes if you buy $25,000 of computers from us this year. So I think we'll be seeing a lot of that. So the iMac Pro is a pretty expensive device, but it's a workstation crammed into the iMac footprint. And this may or may not be of interest to folks. I think one of the things that's happened is Apple has lost a lot of Pro users because their computers have simply not been keeping up performance-wise with the rest of the industry. You can get much faster GPUs and processors in Windows computers that may even cost less. They don't look as pretty, but they perform a lot better. The Mac Pro has really upset a lot of people in the professional community, primarily because it was obsolete so quickly after its release by the iMac, which is a consumer level. In fact, when I was looking to get a desktop computer for the channel, I was looking at the iMac, and then I looked at the Mac Pro, and I said, geez, the iMac seems to be a better buy. It has the performance level that I need and offers the 5K display, which you couldn't even get for the Mac Pro. So it looks like they're going to be doing that. The lower level iMacs now will also support VR if they have a discrete GPU built into them. So there's definitely some performance improvements here, but they're still kind of behind where Windows is. And it really, it comes down to, again, being thin and light. This seems to be a common discussion here on the channel. If you like the way the Apple hardware looks, they've got really the nicest displays out there. I've not seen better displays than what I have on my iMac 5. And I look at it, a lot of displays here on the channel. That one is still the best. It's still the brightest. And I guess they even made it brighter in the next edition. I don't see any reason to upgrade. The one I have now is perfectly fine. So I'm not going to be buying this $5,000 computer. I'm saying that now because I don't want to. But it is an attractive thing to have a workstation in something like this. The big issue with these Macs, though, for me, is that I can't work on them. So I could follow the iFixit guide to take them apart and install hard drives and whatnot. But if you have a hard drive failure on this, you just need to take it into the Apple store, and therefore you pretty much need to get the Apple Care in order to not rack up a huge service bill. And for me, I don't have an Apple store nearby. It's about an hour round trip to the two that are nearby where I live. So it's kind of an inconvenience here to work on these things. So I dread my iMac ever going down because they are impossible to work on. And that's the one advantage that Windows machines have, and the Mac Pro for example, had, because you can take them apart and swap out components. Not so easy on these Macs. You got to take the front glass off. You risk really breaking a lot of stuff just to get at the hard drive, which has always aggravated me with these things. So for me, the iMac Pro is a miss. I was hoping they'd have a more practical desktop computer that might be of interest, but that does not look to be the case. Now, one thing that did interest me and prompted me to make an order is the new iPad Pro 10.5. And what I found intriguing about this is, first, its performance gains. I want to see if they hold up, at least compare the two. But also the display. It's 120 hertz now, and it supports HDR. So it supports 10-bit color, 120 hertz. It'll also turn itself down to lower frame rates as well. So it'll run in a 24p mode. I believe there's a 48p mode for the few movies that support that 48 frames per second format there. So lots of intriguing little things about this. And the most interesting one was the latency. They're promising 20 milliseconds of latency on that touch panel with the Apple Pencil, and I'm assuming with fingers as well. And that's pretty darn quick. In fact, what we've tested here in the studio with our game controllers and stuff, the best performance I've had is about 30 milliseconds, and that is with an old Nintendo hooked up with a wire to a CRT television, analog all the way through for the most part. That's about 28 to 30 milliseconds. This looks like it might be a little faster than that. That is pretty darn quick from a latency standpoint, especially on a modern digital device. So I'm really eager just to try out all of those things, and iPads usually do pretty well on the channel. It does look a little larger, though, than the current one that I have, the 9.7. They did make the bezels a little thicker. thinner, so it's not as big as it could have been, but it would have been awesome to see a completely bezel-less device like the iPhone is rumored to be or the new Samsung phone is, but this one is not. So we'll see what the size looks like and what the performance differences are, and we'll have a full review up when this comes in, hopefully next week. And they are continuing to evolve the Apple Watch interface, and they are actually adding something that I thought should have been on it from the get-go, which is a Google Now-like interface with cards that puts things up in front of you based on what it thinks you should know ahead of time, using some of that machine learning that Google keeps talking about. So they are adding that watch face to the mix. There's a bunch of other features as well. It looks like they're really doubling down on fitness features right now on the Apple Watch, because they have now, according to a new report here that I was going to talk about even before all of today's announcements, they've actually surpassed Fitbit in their watch sales. So this is probably the most popular wearable out there on the market right now. And what's been really interesting to me, because I observe things and I know people that are not techies, a lot of my non-techie acquaintances are buying these Apple Watches. I'm seeing them on more and more wrists than I've ever seen before. So the price point is probably where it needs to be now. And I think people are really getting a lot out of them. I bought this 2.5 years ago or so, maybe 2 years ago, just to do a review on the channel. My intention wasn't really to keep it because I wasn't really a watch wearer. I haven't taken it off in 2 years. You've seen it here on my wrist throughout all of these things. And I really have found it quite useful at certain times, especially now that I'm a father of two and I often have things or children in my hands and can't answer a phone or can't respond to a message. I can do all of that now. The Apple Pay thing is a really killer feature for me. When I go and get my coffee, I can just tap my watch against something there and get that done so I don't have to give my credit card and have it stored in some retailer's database somewhere. So there's been a lot of features on this watch that I've been using, but there's no killer app. There's really no app that I use and can't live without on the watch like I would have on my phones and other devices. But I found it to be a really useful little thing. And the fitness thing does help, actually, because I always want to close my little exercise ring and some other stuff. So I really like it. I've been using it for quite a while. In hindsight, I probably should have gotten the more expensive one because the glass face on here will get scratched up over time. It's pretty much the same material as the phone is, and you will see scratches on the phone pretty quickly. Definitely the case with the watch. In fact, this is my second watch because my daughter about a year and a half ago smashed my other one. She took it off the counter and dropped it on the floor, and there goes the screen, so I had to get a replacement. So I would say probably going with the sapphire face may have been the better choice, but what I really want to see them get rid of is that little dial there. Let me put the thing back there. That little dial there does nothing for me, and when I'm on the train, for example, and taking my backpack with me to New York, whenever I take the backpack off, I'm always hitting that little dial and setting the watch off and everything. It's really a useless feature. I would actually prefer this with no buttons on it at all because it does have a fairly useful touchscreen that I usually use to scroll anyhow. But I really like my Apple Watch. I know a lot of you are not Apple fans, but there's a bunch of reasons why I use Apple products, and this was a interesting thing to watch. I think they have something going there with the wearables, and we'll see where it comes out along there. Now, in other news, Intel announced their Core X line of high-end processors. We talked about that 18-core processor on the Xeon side. There's also going to be a Core version of it for PCs and whatnot. So I'm really interested to see how the Core i9, which is their new one, the new high-performance chip, how this will do in games. Can games benefit from 18 cores? I want to know. Let me know down in the comments what you think on that one. We got some discussion on my Facebook page about that. And one last story caught my eye here, speaking of computer repairs, which is a lawsuit being filed against the FBI and the Justice Department about training the Best Buy Geek Squad to look for stuff on customer computers. So here in the U.S., we have a retailer called Best Buy. They sell computers and TVs and all that kind of stuff. And they've got a division called the Geek Squad that repairs computers. And they actually dress them all up like FBI agents with the black ties and dark jackets and everything. It's kind of funny. And it turns out they may actually be working for the FBI or at least being trained by them. And apparently there was some acknowledgement in this article that the Geek Squad has been trained by the FBI to look for stuff. And now the question is, are they going out of their way to rummage through customer files looking for things that they might want to report to the FBI? Or is this something that they'd incidentally come across in the course of repairing a computer? Who knows? But this is one of those things that if you send your computer in for repair, do not give them your password. If they insist on a password or an administrator account, wipe the computer out and give them something completely empty to work with here, because you never know what these people are going to do with your computer when it's in there. What are they going to pull off your hard drive in the course of trying to repair it? And I'm always very nervous about this. Even Apple, who's also about security and everything else, they ask for your password over the phone before you mail a computer in, which is crazy that you've got a customer service person typing in a password, your key to all your private information on your computer, going into their systems and getting passed around to a couple of different employees when those computers go in for repair. So what I do whenever I have a repair, which is rare, but when I do, I wipe it out and send them a completely blank slate to work from, because you do not want to hand over your password to anyone, because who knows what these folks are going to be doing with your private information. Are they, again, going after your personal data unnecessarily here in the hopes that they might find something they can turn over to the FBI? Who knows? But all I know is keep those passwords to yourself and wipe out those computers before they go in for repair. And now it's time for some Q&A from you, the viewers. And our first question comes in from Derwin Estramera, who is curious if I ever have been invited to cover Computex. And if you don't know what Computex is, it's a big computer trade show out in Taipei, Taiwan. It is quite a distance from where I am here in Connecticut, and it would take me a while to get there. It would be very expensive for me to go, because I'd have to pay for me as well as somebody to help me, because I like to have somebody on camera when I cover an event like that, or like CES and some of the other stuff that we have looked at in the past here on the channel. So from a cost perspective, it's hard for me to be competitive with CNET and many other larger outlets that have a huge audience that will give them enough viewership over the course of that event to make it worth it. For me, my business model is really producing evergreen content that lasts a really long time. So unless I have some business reason for going to a show, it's not going to make a lot of sense for me just to go and cover it. I'm sure I could get press credentials to go there. What I do quite a bit, though, is go to New York City, because there are a lot of events that happen in New York. So many of the media organizations that you all consume on a regular basis are based out of New York City. So a lot of the brands have a lot of events there, in addition to some other trade show kind of events that go on. So I go into New York quite a bit. It's very easy for me to go to New York. In fact, I got a train right next door to where I live that can take me there in about 2 hours. And in many cases, I can go in the morning and be back home in the evening. So you can't beat that for travel. It's very affordable and it makes a lot of sense. And I'm able to provide you with a lot of cool stuff as a result of that. So if you do hear of things going on in New York, don't assume that I know about them. Definitely leave me a comment down below or an email to lon@lon.tv, and I'll see about getting over to New York. I usually go in once or twice a month into the city, and I really love going to New York just to be there. So anything that you know about, I'd love to hear about, because those are always the best trips for me to make, and I can definitely get you some great content. In fact, I'm going to New York next week for one of these Pepcom shows, where a whole bunch of consumer electronic brands get together in one place, and I can talk to a lot of different companies. You've seen some of my videos that I've done from those before. So let me know. I'm happy to cover anything that you might know about in New York as my schedule allows. And Sheik1982 wrote in response to my Plex DVR video about the fact that cable companies are not going to like this. They're not going to see a convenience factor, and all they're going to say is piracy. And there's certainly some risk here that cable companies could decide to start encrypting all of their content on top of requiring you to buy the cable card or rent the cable card from them to get the channels that are part of your subscription plan. In fact, many or some cable providers do that right now. And for those scenarios where your cable provider encrypts everything, this will not work with the Plex DVR. The HD Home Run solution, which will consist of their HD Home Run View application and their DVR add-on, will support that in the near future. And they're going through the motions now to try to get that software certified. Their hardware does work with DRM on Windows Media Center, but the process of getting this DRM certification from the cable gods is immensely difficult, very expensive, and there's a lot of liability if someone were to break your encryption scheme and start pirating content. So you have to get it right the first time to make it all work. So on the HD Home Run side of things, you can do it with the Windows application, their HD Home Run View app on Windows and also on the Xbox One. You can watch live encrypted DRM content through your cable system on those two platforms, but you can't record it yet. You will at some point in the future, but Plex will probably never support that. However, it does work fine over the air. So if you have an over-the-air broadcast or broadcast that you can receive from your home or office, you can bring it into your Plex server and stream that out to your heart's content. Nobody can stop you from doing that, primarily because the use of this kind of activity, home recording or streaming stuff to yourself, is a fair use. There was a court case back in the 80s between Sony and Universal Pictures over the Betamax video recorder over this home recording thing. And there was a 5-4 Supreme Court decision that decided use your own private use of content that you are receiving and paying for in many cases is a fair use. You can do whatever you want with it, provided you're not selling it or broadcasting it out to others. So if you are planning to sell access to your Plex server, I strongly suggest you don't do that, because you will land yourself into some trouble there. There are broadcast retransmission laws here in the U.S. about that kind of thing. But if you're just doing it between you and your family, you should be fine, and no one's going to come after you, and probably nobody's going to know you're even doing it, but you are protected under the law here. So just keep it between your family and you should be just fine. And this next question comes in from Timothy Baxter. I've got a couple other interesting side notes on this one in a second. He's wondering if I knew that Amazon was using my video of the NVIDIA Shield TV on their product listing. And if you go over to that product listing, you'll see it down there below in the related video shorts. Now, a couple of months ago, or maybe a year ago now, who knows, Amazon initiated a new way for creators to share content on Amazon's system. So I can upload my videos to Amazon, and when people watch it on Amazon, I get a small cut of Prime members watching my videos. And I haven't done too much with that because it's very difficult to get your videos on Amazon. You need very accurate closed captioning. You need to have no references to external websites anywhere in the video. They actually have people that watch every video that gets uploaded. And more often than not, they reject my video for some reason or another. And it was just too time consuming based on the very small amount of money I've been earning from it. But I do a lot of product reviews on Amazon because, as many of you know, I've been a member of the Amazon Vine program for the last 10 years. In fact, my membership in that program has led to my creation of the channel, because I started reviewing things that I was getting through Amazon on YouTube, and that was what really got everything moving here. So I'm very grateful to Amazon for that opportunity. And what they've been doing apparently is grabbing that customer review content and integrating it into their video shorts thing. Unfortunately, I'm not getting compensated for views on these videos, but the Amazon Vine program has been so good for the channel, I'm okay with it, and I'm willingly putting my content there and giving Amazon permission in doing so to use my content in different ways on their platform. And it works out well for me. Half my revenue month to month comes from Amazon Associates, the affiliate program, so I'm okay with that. I think I'm being fairly compensated for use of my content. However, there are some things that happen here that are not good uses of my content and basically amount to content theft. I talked about this a little bit before, and I'm so grateful to Jose View and many other viewers who have been very frequently letting me know when others are re-uploading my content, because what happens a lot is people grab my Amazon videos because they do not have my intros and outros on them. I can't put my logo on it because that is not allowed per Amazon's rules. They download the video from Amazon, upload it to YouTube, usually with an affiliate link, which then earns money for that person off of the content that I work so hard to make, and it drives me crazy. And unfortunately, I don't have the tools available to me that other larger creators have, namely that automated content takedown system I don't get access to as a small creator. So what I have to do is, when somebody like Jose here notifies me that my content was uploaded somewhere, I then have to go over to the YouTube copyright page here, fill out the whole big form for the DMCA takedown, click submit, and for every video, I've got to go through the motions here of finding the video that is in violation, finding the one that belongs to me and putting that one on the form, clicking submit, and going through this process every single time. It is arduous, but I found that the more I do it, the less things happen with my content, because the people that are out there distributing this content to others are less likely to do it if the people getting the content are going to get copyright strikes against them. The copyright strike, I believe, lasts for 6 months or so on a person's channel when they re-upload my content, and I have a no-tolerance policy for this. If you want to use my content in some way, ask permission. It's very easy. I can tell you what I'm comfortable with, what I'm not comfortable with, and we can take it from there. But to just blatantly rip me off, not cool. And I really appreciate everyone letting me know. So what's funny is, every once in a while, the person that uses my content illegally will write in begging me for that copyright strike to go down. And in this case, the person said, well, I guess that there was somebody impersonating you, and they said I could upload the video because they said it was you. And this guy paid this guy $5 to steal my content and re-upload it. He got ripped off, didn't he? So this is the example of the kind of stuff that goes on there. In this case, it's probably some kid that didn't know any better, but you really should know better. If you're going to start a YouTube channel, make your own content. Don't steal other people's content, and don't pay people who are stealing other people's content to do it. Hopefully that was a lesson learned and $5 lost for this guy. I hope he didn't spend too much money buying a bunch of pirated Amazon review content. And now it's time for a Q&A for you. And as I sit here making this video, I'm looking at all the little time frames next to the video clips that I'm making, and I'm thinking this one's going to go longer than 30 minutes or close to it. And I've been looking at over the last couple of months. It used to be 15 minutes, and then it got to 25 minutes, and now we're frequently in the half-hour territory. Are these videos too long? If so, let me know. I'll start taking some things out because I just keep going here, and I like to cover a whole bunch of stuff. And I know people are enjoying the wrap-up and appreciate the fact that I put an index down below. But I'd love to hear from you if you think these videos should be shorter or if you're okay with them being the length that they are. I am now uploading an audio version every Tuesday to my podcast feed, so you will be able to get this in audio form if you want to put it on your iPod or something to walk around with it. I generally don't have too much visual content in this, so you can definitely do that if you wish, but let me know down below in the comment stream. Next, we have the channel of the week, and this week we're going to recognize John's Arcade. As you all know, I love my retro games, and I love arcade games more than anything else because they're so few places for me to play them around here these days. And John actually doesn't live too far from me. I don't know him, but he's not far from where I live because I've seen him driving around in some of the highways that I drive around on. And he buys old arcade games and refurbishes them and gets them working again. And his basement is filled with it. What's great is he starts off every video down there. He's got everything turned on. It reminds me of my childhood running around video arcades with all the familiar sights and sounds there. So cool channel. And he goes on for really long videos here, far longer than what you're watching here. Usually they're about an hour or so or more of him just kind of walking through stuff. And it's a great channel if you like to have stuff running in the background at work or something. Really fun to see what he's up to. And he's got a great personality. Really enjoy watching him and his enthusiasm. So this week on the channel, I've got a whole bunch of stuff. I'm not sure if I'm going to get to all of it, but Elias Saba, who runs AFTVnews.com, is going to let me borrow his Echo Look, which is this creepy Amazon Echo camera that does a couple of things, like take selfies and stuff. It works like an Amazon Alexa does. And then you can also ask it for fashion advice. And you all know I wear like five or six different things. Maybe I'll just put all five on and see which one it likes the best. So we'll play around with this. I think I should have it later this week. So we'll be reviewing that, hopefully. I found this on Dell the other day. This is a gaming laptop, the Inspiron 5000. That is a completely AMD-based machine, both its CPU and GPU. They go for about anywhere from $650 to $800. It runs with the RX 460 GPU, which is the same GPU that's in the new MacBook Pro. This obviously costs a lot less than that, so we'll see how an all-AMD gaming laptop compares to some of the Intel-based ones that Dell has, including one that we looked at just a couple of weeks ago, so hope to get to that. This one we're finally going to get to, the Leva Z Plus, which is a i5-based machine. It's a very small little computer, about the size of some of those fanless devices we usually look at that are relatively slow. This one's pretty quick. It's got a laptop i5 Kaby Lake processor inside, and I think it might be of interest to people looking to run a home theater PC because it can do all the HEVC content that some of those less expensive devices cannot do. So we'll take a look at this and see how well it can dissipate heat. It is not fanless. It's got a little fan in there, but a full-blown i5 Kaby Lake chip, and we'll test it out for Plex serving also. And we're also going to be taking a look at HP's PageWide technology this week or next. And this is a newer printing technology that has been mostly at the commercial level for a while, but now it's making its way down to the enterprise and small business markets. And what this is a printing technology that, rather than having a head that goes back and forth like a traditional inkjet printer does, this one prints as the paper is running through. So the ink gets sprayed down on the page as the page is running through. So you get the benefits of an inkjet, but it is a lot faster, like a laser printer might be. So you do get some better photo quality out of it when printing documents. And this is not a small device. I thought I was getting like the home office edition. They sent over the main office edition. Look at the size of this thing. In fact, the mailbox company I use for my PO box called me up frantically like, you gotta come get this thing. It's 160 pounds and we have no room for it. So my wife and I ran over, and you can see it takes up the whole back of the Highlander. So that's what the third road down. That thing is big, but I don't know how I'm going to get it back to them. It's on loan to the channel, but they said I'll be working with their logistics provider when I'm done, so I got to figure out how to wrap it all back up again. But quite a big printer. I think it's going to be really fast, and if you're into printing like I am, this might be a really fun little thing to play with because I haven't really played with something different in printing technology in quite some time, so I'm eager to check that out. And I'm hoping to check out the EverDrive N8 this week or next as well. This is a flash cartridge that works with the Nintendo Entertainment System, and the folks from Stone Age Gamer let let me borrow one of theirs because we were hoping it was going to work with that Hyperkin console I looked at last night. Unfortunately, it doesn't, but I'm going to do a full review of the cartridge anyhow so you can see how it works with a real NES. So we'll be testing this thing out and putting it through its paces, so be on the lookout for that. Now, if you want to help the channel, you can. You can go to lan.tv/Patreon and make a monthly contribution to the channel. We have the tip jar set up at lan.tv/tip jar, and we had Venmo going at lan@lan.tv if you are outside the U.S., so you can help the channel in many different ways, and we will acknowledge you in the wrap-up video, and then at the credits at the end of each video, I'll be updating that later this week, early next week, with all of June's contributors, so be on the lookout for that. If you want to engage with the channel, you can go to my extras channel at lan.tv/extras for supplementary and additional content. Our email list, which will be going out very shortly at lan.tv/email for updates on all sorts of things that I'm up to. My Facebook page, which I post on quite frequently at lan.tv/Facebook. You can see a huge nest of wires I found that has been accumulating over 30 years. Kind of funny how those nests begin to form. And we've got the store at lan.tv/store where I sell some of the items that I have reviewed here on the channel. And I'm thinking about doing a notification email list for that. If you're interested, let me know down in the comments and I'll put it together. So every time I add an item, I will notify people because I'm seeing a lot of clicks going over to the store. And I bet it would be helpful for a lot of folks to know exactly when things get updated versus having to go and check all the time. So let me know. I will consider doing that. And you can let me know down in the comments. And then all of my past live streams are archived at lan.tv/livestreams. And if I get caught up this week, I might do a live stream of that printer as I set it up. Might be kind of fun to see me work with this enormous device here. So we have to get a friend over here to move it. It's big. So be on the lookout for that. So that's going to do it for this week's weekly wrap up. Thank you all for your continued viewership and support. Greatly appreciate it and hope I wasn't going too long today. This is Lon Seibin. Thanks for watching.
This channel is brought to you by my Patreon supporters, including Gold Level supporters Mark Bollinger, Brian Miller, Mr. Morse, and Cody Falk. If you want to help the channel, you can by contributing as little as $1 a month. Head over to lan.tv/Patreon to learn more. And don't forget to subscribe. Visit lan.tv/s.